Welcome to ABW Radio Live. Apologies for the delay, but I had stuff to check on. I am Chris, your host. I am joined by two pre-booked guests and one doing a run-in. Bloody Americans. I have John. Hello, John.
Hello, Chris. Afternoon, everyone.
I have Carl. Good afternoon, Carl.
Hello, Chris. Hello, everyone else.
And the American, the Panther Man, it's Mr. Shredder. Hello, Shreds.
Dab on him, everybody. Keep pounding. Keep pounding.
I'll pound you if you mention that bloody dance again. Right. afternoon to everybody in the chat box, as usual. Thank you very much for joining us. Right. An hour of us will talk, then. Let's rock and roll. Jason, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. What did you make of today's game? Give us your overall thoughts, feelings, anything like that.
We'll give it a grade of a B. Not a vintage Arsenal performance. Not a spectacular oohing and awing the whole time. But a good win. A slight confidence booster heading into Leicester, and I think it's what we needed right now from that game to go in there with tough conditions against a sort of a feisty opponent in Bournemouth and be able to walk away with 3 points and not let Leicester extend their lead on us was massive today. So big credit to the boys, and you know, obviously put our finishing boots on in the first half with a couple of good goals and some you know, tense moments at the end, but that's why we have Petr Cech back there to do that. So overall, please, some performances you maybe like to see would be a little bit better, but at the same time, we did enough to get a win and it be somewhat comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's a good synopsis. Carl, what did you think? Anything you wanna add into that?
Agreed with Jason. We got the win, and that was like the main priority. That's what we really, really needed. The performance, the first half was brilliant. The first half was absolutely classic Arsenal, brilliant. Moved the ball around quickly, got the ball forward, brilliant. Second half, not too good. But at the end of the day, we held on for the win, which was the main priority. We got that, and we move on.
Exactly that. John, I know you missed the first half due to family commitments. Family, it was getting in the way, God's sake. What did you sort of think, having looked back, having looked at some stats? I presume you look at stats. What do you think of today and the result in general?
Yeah, it was confusing coming in, obviously, just watching from the second half on, because Bournemouth started really well, and I thought, ooh, this is weird. Maybe we got two lucky goals, but I managed to catch highlights of the first half and saw the two goals, and yeah, we played really well. Second half wasn't great. So we got half of what I wanted today. The win was the most important thing. Obviously, this time of the season, it is just, if we just get 3 points from now to the end of the season, then I'm not going to complain. I would have liked a better performance overall, just to up my confidence going into some big games. But 3 points was the most important thing today.
Yeah, we will we'll touch on people losing their proverbial poo bags later on. Right, let's have a look at the lineup then. Carl, I'll come to you on this one. So the Ox got the start. Predictably, social media went apoplectic, but he did well, didn't he? I thought overall you can still see he's a player that's lacking confidence. But what did you make of his selection on that right hand side?
I was surprised, I'm not going to lie. I didn't see it coming, but maybe that's the reason why he was chosen, you know, surprised Bournemouth a bit as well. From what he did on the pitch, you know, you can't complain. He ran into the channels. He was quite direct today, which I thought was really good. Like, he ran at Bournemouth. You can tell he's a confidence player, because sometimes, you know, when stuff didn't come off for him, like, he put his head down, but he took his goal extremely well. I thought it was unlucky to come off, to be honest. I don't know if that was a fitness thing, because he hasn't really played a lot, but no, for what he did on the pitch, for the time he was on there, I thought he done quite well.
Yeah, I'm full agreement with that one. Jace, what did you make of, we'll come to his tackling skill in a minute, but Flamini got the nod again ahead of Coquelin. I see that as the manager just being a little bit cautious, given, you know, what we've had happen with Alexis and others. What did you make of that decision?
Yeah, it's puzzling to me, because I love Flamini and what he's done for the team, but I don't think he's our best option right now, so It had me a little concerned. I know some people said, you said before we started, you know, you think he set back a little bit more. You know, you said maybe somebody had killed him to do that. My response to that was, I'm sure people tell him to do a lot of stuff. He's already proven that he's going to do what he wants to do, what he thinks is right in the match, which is one of my biggest criticisms of him. But it did seem today like he tended to be just a little more disciplined, minus the Street Fighter-esque tackle early on in the match. I think overall he did okay. He did trip over the ball, which made me laugh. I literally LOL'd at some point during the game when he did that, just on the outside of the penalty area. And there's still times when it's just you see him, and he just doesn't fill me with confidence at any moment, even when he's defending now, because he's so known to put that rash tackle in, and it can be cause for concern. But today I think he played better than he has in the past. We're going to need him to continue that if he wants to keep his place, because I think Coughlin's knocking on the door.
I'll speak about Flamini in a mo, but you're absolutely right there. John, other than that, were you surprised by anything else? Was there any other changes you would have liked to have seen happen? And we'll see Olivier Giroud got the nod up front. Any surprise to you in that?
No, the only one really that I've... The most surprising thing was that Flamini started, to be honest. I know that we basically didn't have an option because Elneny's, his wife, was having a baby today, or went into labour this morning. So I would have liked to see Elneny start. I'd like to see him start more games until Coquelin is ready to come back in. And it's not a dig against Flamini. I think he's great and he's done lots of good things for the team. I just don't think he's there anymore. He's got the legs to do it. You were right, he did sit noticeably deeper today, but I still don't think he offers the defence enough cover. I just say thank you to Petr Cech for some of the saves he pulled off today. John Terry is, as much as I hate him, is being proved right for all those points that Cech is saving us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good job that Cech isn't disabled, because Terry would have parked in his space. And we should also mention Gabriel got the start over Mertesacker, Saka, which surprised me a little bit, although given the fact that Wenger would have known full well what a phobie potentially brought in pace, it did make quite a sensible choice. So that's one in the eye for everyone that says he's got no tactical brain. Yawn. I should say as well, I've made an observation. Do you remember the man this podcast is illustriously named after, Dennis Bergkamp, looks a lot like Beavis from Beavis and Butthead? Well, I have decided that Gabriel, with his new haircut, does indeed look like Butthead. So we need to find a new Beavis. I'm not sure if we've got one in the squad or not. So answers on a postcard as to who we could sign, if not, because that is a double act that needs to happen. Anyway, moving on. So, first goal, Jace. Obviously, we'll touch on the goals coming quite quickly together. But Magic Mezut decided that he'd had enough assisting for a game. He thought, sod it, I'll just wander in and smash on him on my right foot. Very, very decent ball in from Aaron Ramsey, and explosive finish. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I thought I actually thought that's where we looked most dangerous today was the ball over the top. And Ramsey had put a couple of those in and looked dangerous. And we finally got one at a dangerous spot where it could sort of rattle around. And usually you see, you know, Mesut take those with a lot more finesse, sort of some precision touches, almost like a pass into the net. But this one, it just seemed like he was taking whatever frustration he had from not having an assist in 2016 and put that into one failed swoop onto the ball and went great into the back of the net, just over Borch's head, I believe. And really good to see him finish like that and for him to be in positions like that, because I think a lot of people criticized him early on for not sort of being in those positions to finish those types of sort of rebounded balls off like we've seen some other number 10s in the past do. So fair credit to him. I really think that he's sort of been the player of the year for us so far. Whether he's scoring goals and assisting or not, what he does on the pitch to create and put himself and other players into position is really second to none in the league.
Yeah, goals. Goals are definitely something that he could do with adding to his game, and that was good. Good today. Good that he got on the score sheet. Seemed to enjoy it. We'll take goals, whoever they come from. In fairness, but yeah, it's good to see that. And then Carl, just what was it? 2 minutes later, or whatever seconds? I didn't count, to be honest. I lost my abacus, but 2-0 very, very quickly afterwards, and Oxlade-Chamberlain, the much maligned Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think John made a point. Pre-pods, he did the right thing. Across goal, touch of luck about whether it goes in, maybe, maybe not. But very, very good from him to hopefully give him a bit of a boost of confidence. And at 2-0, we looked pretty good, didn't we, at that stage?
Yeah, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain needed that. I really do. I think, you know, he'll go home tonight, you know, probably watch that goal a few times, you know, that'll give him a bit of a boost of confidence. I'm still not too sure whether it's a cross or a shot. I genuinely don't know. But yeah, like in the first half, we were looking extremely comfortable. We were sort of running the show. Bournemouth, you know, they had a bit of a threat, but, you know, it was nothing that we couldn't sort of deal with. And the first half, I didn't really want it to end because we were controlling that game all over the pitch. Everything that Bournemouth threw at us, we sort of dealt with, and we dealt with quite comfortably. You know, I wish we could have added more goals, you know, in the first half because there were chances, but, you know, it wasn't to be. But, yeah, as for Oxlade-Chamberlain, he done well, and hopefully that will give him a very big boost and, you know, he'll go on and carry on and, you know, get more goals.
Chase, Carl touched on something just before I come to John. Carl touched on something there with the sort of, not lack of, but wasn't quite ruthless. At 2-0 and Bournemouth were visibly, you know, not on their knees, but you could see that they were completely stunned by it. Would you not have liked to have seen us push on and try to get a second, a third, fourth, you know, trying to improve that goal difference, or the confidence at least?
Yeah, we should have won that game, you know, 4 or 5-0, really, with the talent that we have on the pitch that can break teams down like that. And it seems sort of the constant, I want to say, I think it was the last Bournemouth game that we played, and it was 2-0 as well at home. If my memory serves me correctly, and it's really one of those frustrating things that we just seem to go up one or two, and then we just sort of sit. We obviously came out in the second half, in my opinion, just sort of, okay, we got this, let's just not do anything stupid. And of course, the way we defend, sometimes we do stupid stuff. So, yeah, we need to, and I think a lot of it does come down to the type of players that we have. We have those players who have a ton of great quality and skill, but they're not that ruthless, I'm going to cut your throat open and show you your heart before you die type of player.
Good grief.
We need that. Flamini does that, but not in the right ways. But we don't have that ruthless mentality about us, and to me that comes back to the manager. So I think we need to have, you know, he needs to instill in them even a little more urgency at 2-0. We had some other chances, and it just seemed like we seemed to sort of put the proverbial handbrake on at that point.
And just for the chat box, if you need a body disposed of, contact Jason Schrader at 0500. Yeah. Thanks for that, Jason. That's quite a description. I know what you mean, though. I know what
you mean. We'll feed him to the pigs, don't worry.
That's fine, yeah. And of course, if you do that, it doesn't leave any traces. It's all good.
Correct.
John, moving away from murder briefly, at 2-0, again, you know, looking at the game from what you saw, we controlled the pace for long periods. Second half, though, I wouldn't say we were poor, but we did seem to drop off the pace a little bit. It did seem to be a little bit flat. Is that a concern for you, or are you sort of looking at it in hindsight, happy that we just did what we needed to do to get the result, and now we rest the legs?
But like overall, getting the win was the biggest thing, like I said earlier. But it was weird second half, because obviously I only saw highlights of the first, and the way Carl and Jace and everyone else I've spoken to said we played in the first half. Second half, we looked like a totally different team, and Bournemouth, credit to them, came out and started really fast. But it wasn't like they were throwing tackles in or, you know, being physical. They were like outplaying us for periods of the game and keeping the ball well and moving it around. They didn't make like too many clear-cut chances, I suppose is the one thing you would say. But they were getting a lot of space in midfield. Was it Matt Ritchie and Harry Arter, the two players sort of were sort of getting through the middle quite comfortably at the back four. And I mean, I don't mind if people are going to shoot from distance because you just know that Petacek's going to be there and save those sort of shots from range. So, but against I hate saying it, better opposition, that would be a worry. But we saw the game out, and then obviously towards the end of the match, anyway, we had a few more chances where maybe, excuse me, maybe we should have scored ourselves. But yeah, it was a little bit worrying how easy they got some crosses in and sort of walked through the middle a bit. But there's been a sort of the team still looks tired, which is weird, and it's been going on for a little bit too long now. So hopefully with more players coming back, like Coughlin especially, we could sort of just rotate a bit more. But like what you were saying about the first half, not going for the third goal maybe and just killing the game. And rather than Bournemouth going, oh, okay, second half we'll have a go, their attitude would switch to, oh, okay, it's damage control rather than trying to get back in it.
Yeah, well, summed up. It's kind of a weird game really, because I don't know, Carl, I'll ask you on this one. I don't know if you felt the same way as I did, but... as Josh has made this point in the chat box now, we did kill the game off. I was at 2-0, I never really felt that we were going to throw anything away. I mean, you know, there was a few flutters, and obviously Petacek made a few good saves, but they were late on. I never really felt like the result was in doubt. So are we maybe being a bit harsh that we quote-unquote didn't kill it off?
Maybe we just want to see more goals, because we want to boost our goal difference. I know that's that lot of the road, their goal difference is better than ours, so this was kind of an opportunity to maybe get some goals, you know, on the ball to improve our goal difference, because, you know, there's no point saying that the league can't go down to goal difference. Let's look at when Man United and Man City sort of had their challenge. It came down to goal difference. I'm sure it did. But I think this is an opportunity just to, you know, get some goals. And, you know, goals boost confidence as well. So, you know, the more goals you get, the more confident, you know, you go out there and sort of play. I didn't feel threatened by Bournemouth. I didn't think, you know, like there was ever a comeback on. If they had that sort of that spell that they sort of dominated us for about 10 minutes in the earlier on in the second half, then maybe you're thinking, you know, you never know, because the old Arsenal, we probably would have conceded a goal. Like, but no, I never really felt like we was even going to draw that game. Like when we got 2-0 up, I did kind of think, okay, yeah, second half we'll go and get another one and then we'll absolutely finish it. But I think that's what more people are sort of worried about. It's just the fact that, you know, the goal difference is quite wide, even to Leicester as well. I'm sure Leicester's goal difference are better than ours as well. So getting goals hopefully would have, I don't know, boosted the confidence of the players.
Yeah, that's. I think that's fair. Arsenal fans wanting more than we get. Who'd have thought? But yeah, I think that's fair. We'll address Jason. I want to ask you about this one, the Flamini challenge. Flamini challenge, whatever you want to call it. I mean, yes, I understand some people saying it was a bit reckless, a bit irresponsible. For me, it's not a sending off. I just don't think at that stage of the game, whether it's a two-footed. I mean, if you actually watch it back, it's not two-footed. He goes in with 2 feet as he leaves the ground, but the actual challenge itself is with 1 foot. What I would say is that, do you think people, particularly our fans, you can't win? Because if we don't throw ourselves into challenges, we don't want it enough, and we're not, you know, we haven't got enough balls. And if we do throw ourselves into challenges and show that passion, then it's reckless. Which side do you sit on the fence with?
Well, I think that you can throw yourself into challenges without it having to be reckless. I think the problem is Flamini does seem to lose control from time to time. The other thing is referees know that. I actually disagree with you. I think a red is a red, whether it's the first minute or the 90th minute.
It should be. I agree. Yeah, it should
you
be.
You can't ref for a minute of the game. You have to ref consistently. But like I forgot who it was in the chat box that said it, that it is an unwritten rule that it's too early for a red for that kind of challenge. Obviously, if that's in the second half, I do think we're down to 10 men. But it's just, yeah, no, it is worrying to me, though, that it doesn't seem, and you see other clubs sort of throwing themselves into challenges, but it doesn't seem as reckless. You know, Flamini practically tried to wrap his legs around, forgot which player it was, almost. The other thing that is, if you're going to leave your... People say, oh, well, if you leave your feet, you're going to have to leave both feet off the ground at some point if you're sliding. That's just how a slide works. One foot should come off to get the ball. The other should go underneath you to slide so you can pop back up when you win the ball. It's a very traditional slide. It's the same slide that's used in baseball. But at the same time, the problem with Flamini is he doesn't ever seem to tuck that one leg back. He just seems to continue to go and say, well, if I'm not going to win it with my left, I'll win it with my right, which is not always the best thing because that's how you one, get red cards, which hurt your team, and two, that's also how you hurt other players. I do think the fans specifically, well, Arsenal fans are fickle. The sky is blue. So let's not act like it's some, you know, that's a different type of a new type of occurrence. The thing that I would say is we can, to those fans who think that we, you know, we don't have the balls, we do have the balls. It's just the fact that when we do have balls, they're usually blue balls and we're in so much pain that we cause others pain. Red cards, injuries, everything else like that. So it's just one of those weird things that no one's ever going to be happy with it because you're always going to have the really old school people who go, oh, that was never a tackle or that was never a card in my day. And you're going to have the new people who are a little more about the finesse and they're always going to say, oh, that's so reckless and he should be sent off. So it's just, it's one, it's a generational thing. And two, we as a team, I think because we do try to play with more finesse, do put ourselves in bad situations when we do try to go flying in because that's probably not what we're training on. So we don't have the best practice at it. Whereas where other teams, I do think, have a little more training on how to put in a more proper, restrained, but still forceful challenge.
Yeah, well summed up. Well summed up. As I say, you know, I can see why, people would think it's a red, and yeah, you know, if it's on our player, we're probably all up in arms. But I've seen them given, I've seen them not given, and if you look at the still of the photo, as the foot comes onto the ball, one foot is behind the other. So,
even in our broadcast over here, they said in real time it looked way worse than it did
exactly
on the replay. But that's the problem is the fact that we don't ever – you don't get decisions from the referee off of replays. You get them in real time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, the whole – sorry, that is the one thing that does annoy me when you watch footage back and they show the highlights and they show slow down replays and all that kind of thing. The referee doesn't see it in slow motion. He doesn't get, you know, a photographer doesn't run on the pitch with a Polaroid, take the picture, and then wait for it to develop and then show the ref and then he goes, oh, yeah, no, okay, I've seen that now. Yeah, okay, I'll make my decision. He sees it in real time, and that's how you have to make your decision. The whole making a strong challenge thing, the perfect example is someone like Coquelin. He puts his foot in and absolutely hammers the other player, but he does it fairly.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with like following through when you win the ball, that kind of thing, and giving a little nudge and a little elbow, that kind of thing. That's fine. And I think the difference between how Flamini say flies into a tackle and Coquelin does, that's where you can show that I've got passion, I've got balls, but I'm sensible in the way I tackle.
Yeah.
And Coquelin didn't used to have that. He used to tackle like Flamini did. There's something he's developed.
It's a maturity thing, which is what worries me about Flamini.
I think with Flamini as well, he's got a history, which obviously people will look at. I remember when he snapped that Spurs player in half, which, by the way, was hilarious for AC Milan. I think it was Corluca, and that was funny. And, of course, we know he likes tackling Danny Rose as well, the fat prick. Anyway, something else, actually, I just want to bring up very quickly, and this is a bit of a pet peeve, but I have to bring it up because I've got the forum to do so. Harry Arter went down injured, I think it was, I don't know, 20 minutes into the game, whatever. And we got the ball, we played on, rightly so, as the law stipulates, right? And the Bournemouth fans are all booing, Arter cheating, blah, blah, blah. And then Bournemouth win the ball back, and I think it's Danny Pugh, gets the ball and runs forward with it, and then gets tackled, and then screams at us to put the ball out. It's like, hang on a minute, mate. if you want to put the ball out for treatment, you put the ball out when you've got it. It's a real pet peeve of mine. The rule clearly states, unless it's a head injury or the referee stops it, you play on. So I just want to get that off my chest because it really bugs me.
Chris is just clarifying that no other team is allowed to do that other than Arsenal.
Well, no, I'd say the same if it was us, mate. You know, I would, seriously. If it's the referee's decision to stop the game, or if it's a head injury, and you know, if you get the ball back and it's your player down, fine, put the ball out. Well, they didn't do that, so tough titties. Anyway, let's move on. So, we're playing the game, obviously. You know, we come up with a victory. I want to just sort of touch on some individual things, you know, within the game. We'll stick to sort of the Flamini Ramsey axis for a second. I want to get some thoughts on this. Now, I'm still of the belief that it's not my cup of tea. I'm still not completely sure. I don't trust Ramsey centrally. I know people don't like hearing it, but it's just my opinion. And I certainly don't trust Ramsey centrally with Flamini. Do you think possibly that the change late on, Carl, I'll ask you on this one, the change late on that saw Coquelin come on for Oxlade-Chamberlain, and you saw Ramsey go right, and you actually saw Coquelin and Flamini together as an out-and-out central defensive midfield pairing, do you think that's something we might see a bit more of in the next few weeks?
No, too defensive, my personal opinion. You need someone breaking forward, you know, as much as I miss Santi, you know, he's got that sort of ability to get the ball and drive forward. Flamini and Coquelin in the middle was, for me, be way too defensive. I mean, I know Flamini, like Jason said, Flamini will do what he wants to do, you know, no one's going to tell him otherwise. But, you know, primarily his role is defensive midfielder, and so is Coquelin. And I think unless you're playing against a team, maybe someone like Barcelona, yes, I would put them two in the middle and just try your best to stop their flow of attack. But for any Premier League team, no, I wouldn't want to see them two start in any game.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I think certain games we might see it, but it'll be interesting to see if it's deployed, as you rightly say, Luke.
Yeah, that would allow Flamini to get in the box and try those 40-yard volleys with his right foot when he should take it on his left, or vice versa.
Can we give him some credit today? You know, because
no, I'm still pissed about the fact that he was in that match. I forget, it was a couple matches ago. He was the player most, like, furthest forward.
Yeah.
Receiving balls into the box. Yeah. At what point is that okay for you if you know that you start that far back defensively? And today he did a good job. I'm going to give him credit, Chris. But that's why I actually almost think that Coquelin and Flamini would work, because then Flamini would be like, ah, Coquelin's beside me.
We have the return of Robot Jace.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Exercise the demons.
Pull it out, try again, said the victim to the schoolboy. John, pick up where Jace was there. I mean, particularly a game like in the Nou Camp, if you think about that one. I know it's only a couple of weeks away now. I mean, is that the way we go? Is it too defensive for you? Do you agree with Carl, or do you think it's something that might be tried, particularly in tough away games?
No, it's not something I want to see at any point, to be perfectly honest. I don't mind bringing Flamini on from the bench to shore things up and sort of going 4-3-3 or something like that, or 4-5-1. The idea of starting a game with Coquelin and Flamini does not excite me in the least bit. If we were going to do that, I'd rather see Elneny play next to Coquelin. If we wanted to go really, really defensive, we still haven't seen Ramsey play next to Coquelin other than one game, which was the start of the season. And I think against a team like Barcelona or any top-level competition team, you need people who can actually get about the pitch quickly, which Flamini can't really do anymore. And again, it's not to have a dig at him. I love Flamini. He's been a great servant for the club. But, you know, you need legs in there, and sadly he hasn't got them.
Sorry,
Aussie Dom's in the chat. Oh, he's asking me questions about Magic.
God's sake, Dom.
Oh, God.
Taking over as usual. Can't get a staff, can you? Okay, let's focus on the Ox then, because obviously he got the place in the starting lineup today. We've touched briefly on his goal. Carl, overall performance, I mean, I think somebody was saying, I don't know who it was now, was saying that that right-hand side position is there for the taking. Joel Campbell has looked jaded the last few weeks. Theo Walcott doesn't convince anyone. What did you make of Ox today, and do you think that's potentially something we're going to dabble with in more in the coming weeks?
Yeah, because there's no one we've got at the moment who can make that right midfield role their own. For the time he was on the pitch, I thought he'd done quite well. I think towards the second half, maybe he was unlucky to come off, I think. Maybe Arsene Wenger just wanted to go a bit more defensive and shore things up a bit, because I thought it was a very weird substitution. Like, if you're going to take off Chamberlain, my initial reaction was thought Theo would come on or bring on Gibbs. That's what I thought would happen. But no, for the time he was on the pitch, he done well. You know, he took his goal well. He done the basic things okay. You know, he did give the ball away a little bit, but everyone was doing it in the team, to be honest. You know, there was not one person who sort of held the ball up well. I think, like you said, I think he genuinely is a confidence player. And, you know, I think he'll go home and I think he'll watch that goal over and over again. And, you know, he'll think, okay, I can do this. Now I've got the ability to do this. You know, forget people saying, oh, it's only because it's against Bournemouth. Bournemouth are a Premier League team, no matter what you think of them. So hopefully in the coming weeks, you know, he will get more chances to play on the right-hand side and, you know, he'll do well.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair sum up. And you know, as you say, he's got a chance now. You know, and it's just about getting consistent and showing us the form that, well, the ability that I think we all know he has got, or certainly possesses anyway. Jace, are you back with us? Are you alive?
Is it all good? I am. How am I now?
You sound okay. I think we should be all right. Let's take it for a test drive.
If I drink more bourbon, the robot will leave.
That is the way forward. Drink. What did you make of Olivier Giroud today, Jace? I mean, he's a guy that's... John made the point earlier on that some of the team look a little bit tired, No more so than Giroud. And it, not so much physically, but he just looks like a step off the pace, maybe. A little bit jaded, a little bit mentally tired. You know, his goals, if I wouldn't say dried up, but he's you know, his goal return, he had that spurt of goals, and now it's a couple of games without... What would you do in this situation? Because we've got Theo Walcott, who would struggle to lock my own door for me if I gave him the key. You've got Danny Welbeck, who completed 60 minutes the other day, and he's coming back, but he's going to take a few weeks. And what would you do in this situation? Would you keep playing Giroud?
You know, I think whenever we get it, I don't think in the next couple of matches is the right time to really pull him off. One, he's always been a streaky goal scorer. He's never been that consistent, you know, once every other game or once every two games. He's usually been more, you know, five goals in six games, and then all of a sudden he'll go six games without scoring a goal, something like that. I really think that what I personally would like to see would be against, you know, maybe a team like Swansea or something like that. Maybe what we can do is put him in put him on the bench, maybe put Alexis up front with Theo on the right and Joel on the left. I don't think Theo is good enough to play striker for us up top against Premier League teams consistently. Maybe a one-off game would be fine, but I just don't think he's got, especially right now, he just doesn't have the confidence. He's looked okay there in the past, but that's obviously not the position where he plays best consistently. So, but it's worrying, you know, Welbeck probably still at least a month away from really seriously being considered from a full 90 minutes in the Premier League match or Champions League match. So that's not a real viable option at the moment, I don't think. Good that he's going to be coming back, because he's going to add another dimension to the offense that we can bring off the bench or start games with. But, again, that's a ways away, really. So I think right now maybe what you do is you put Sanchez up there, put Theo and Joel in, and see if maybe just the speed and raw ability of those players can maybe frighten the defense.
Yeah, I got most of that. There was a little bit of roboticness, but I got most of that. And the points you made.
I've tried everything. The robots are here to stay, evidently.
Damn them. Damn those robots. John, take us on for this. We had a tweet, actually, Stan the Man. It said, what do you make of Theo coming on with only 30 seconds left? And should we now take it Leicester serious title contenders? We'll come on to that second part. But you saw Oxlade-Chamberlain not even get any minutes in midweek against Southampton when we were pressing for a goal. You saw Theo come on with 30 seconds to go. Is this the manager just quietly elbowing Theo in the ribs and going, you need to give us more, mate?
I don't know whether the manager's doing that intentionally. I think it's it's a symptom of the fact that Walcott works in certain situations, and today wasn't one of them. If you want to hold on to a lead, he's not particularly good in that. If you're chasing a game down and putting lots of pressure on a team and they're sitting and they're on the back foot, sitting deep, he's not really great in that. It's only if a team's really coming at you and they're exposed at the back and there's a lot of space to running behind is probably when Theo's best. And the other side of it is that he hasn't been playing great. He's got, was it one goal in 18 or something?
15 or 16, yeah. Something
or, like, you know, however it is. It was the Man City game, I think, was his last goal.
Yep.
He doesn't deserve a start. You know, Joel Campbell's ahead of him, and we all know how much I love Joel Campbell. Theo's confusing because the manager has got so much faith in any player that he buys, especially the young ones, and he doesn't ever want to get rid of them. I don't get what exactly he offers for the money we pay him. I don't really care about how much wages people are on and money and how much player costs, because it doesn't affect me, and how much the club spends has nothing to do with me. But if you look at it in terms of he's getting paid not quite but nearly the same money as Alexis and Ozil, and there's players in the squad that aren't on as much money as Theo Walcott. If you had to say, you know, I know it sounds a bit of a stupid question, but if you said, okay, give one player 140 grand a week and another player, I don't know what Coquelin's on, 50 grand a week or something like that, you'd be giving the 140 grand a week to Francis Coquelin, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be giving it to Theo Walcott if you were picking between the two at the moment. That kind of thing. So that's possibly wages you could have for a better player. So he does need to improve, because at the moment he's not justifying what the space he takes up in the squad and the amount of wage sort of budget he takes up.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I'm kind of with you completely on that one. I think you've made a good point there.
The other thing as well we'll say is that I think, like Jay said, I think he's a, you know, you play him as a striker, and I don't think he should play on the wing anymore. He doesn't want to play there. That's pretty obvious. He only wants to play up front, so I think you just have to use him as rotation for Giroud. What games he comes in for, I don't know, but
I do have to say, and I know you'll agree with me on this, I'm not having a go at your point because you're absolutely right. He'll play where the hell we tell him to play.
Oh, don't get me wrong.
He's player saying that, you know?
You play where the manager tells you, no matter what. I totally agree with that. I just think that the only place you can play him is up front.
Yeah. I
think you get the best out of him, and also I think he's a liability anywhere else. The problem you have up front is that sometimes you'll do it and sometimes you won't. It depends what Walcott turns up. Yeah. But if you're going to put him somewhere, then at least it's the least damaging position for the team in terms of defensively, because he won't cover when he plays wide.
Mm. Okay. And I have to just say, the chat box quickly before I come to Carl, the Canon underscore 49, no. Just no. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And the rest of you, cheer up. Jesus. Honestly, it's
3 points.
It's like a funeral. I mean, Christ on a bike. Cheer up, people. It's not all bad. Like,
they're upset because the unspeakables are above us.
Yeah, but they won't be for very long. So don't
I know, but it's still very upsetting. It's distressing.
When they're above us in May, then have a moan. Until then, just stop it. Just stop it.
If not when. Jesus. don't say when.
It's not gonna happen. Carl, I just want to touch briefly, and I don't want to go into this in too much depth because we covered this on Thursday, and we seem to cover it most of the radio shows, but the atmosphere, the away fans were fantastic today. You know, we've heard the away fans are always fantastic in truth. Mm-hmm. But I just want to sort of get your thoughts as a person that goes to more home games than not. How many times have you been in recent memory where you've sort of come out of the ground and thought, Christ, this is a bit of a negative place. This is a bit of a Debbie Downer. Even when we've won games, do you think the fans have got a huge part to play in this run-in, particularly at home?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I owned the Emirates or I was in charge of Arsenal, what I would do is what Barcelona do. I would put the away fans right at the top, right in the corner, so you couldn't hear them. You know, forget all this friendly, oh, yeah, it's putting them near, you know, near the bottoms where they can, you know, interact with their players. Fuck that, excuse my language. No, I would put them right in the top, right in the corner where no one can hear them, and that's what I would do. I want Arsenal. Sometimes when you go to the Emirates, sometimes it feels that when you make noise, it must be like you shouldn't, because people look at you when you shout. Like I'm the sort of person, when I go to a game, I will shout and swear my head off. Like I will tell players to, you know, fix up and do stuff. And you know, sometimes it depends where you sit in the Emirates. Sometimes if you sit, I've called the expensive seats, you know, lower tier, right at the front with the people who are probably going to Arsenal for longer than I've been alive. Like sometimes you shout and like people like sort of turn at you to say, oh no, you shouldn't say that. Forget that. I pay my money to come, and if I want a player to do something or if I want to shout, I'm going to do it. And sometimes you try to, like, there's a group of people who try to get a cheer along or try to get some sort of chanting along, and you know, some people don't join in. You're like, did you really just come here to sit down, cross your arms and just watch football? Surely you get sort of, you want to get into the atmosphere, and if you don't create an atmosphere, then obviously the players will sort of feed off that, because they're just thinking, oh, why is everyone so silent, you know? And that's why I feel there should be a singing section within Arsenal, and there should be, I don't know, something. I mean, the stewards don't help either when they tell you to sit down all the time. I don't know if you've or anyone's ever experienced that, where you sort of, you're up there and you want to say something and the stewards come and tell you to sit down. That's, for me, is ridiculous.
Yeah, I take your point and I completely agree. I mean, it's, you know, the atmosphere doesn't help, as you say, when you've got so many people. I've been at games where you almost feel embarrassed to start shouting or singing, and that's not how it used to be, is it? You know, you'd be more embarrassed in the sort of late 80s, 90s. You'd be more embarrassed if you weren't joining in than if you sat there and said, it's very strange, very, very strange how things have changed.
I sorry, just to interrupt you, I generally think it's the sort of people that go to Arsenal, like I said, I think the average age of a season ticket holder at Arsenal must be in their 40s, definitely in their 40s. And if there was, like, I hate to bring up ticket prices, and I know that's, you've done it on the pod, but, you know, it's only those sort of people who can afford a season ticket or sort of won't relinquish their season ticket. I don't know, wherever it is. But like you said, you do sometimes feel embarrassed to stand up and chant.
Yeah, I agree. And as you quite rightly say, I'm not gonna touch that steaming hot rod of ticket prices, because we'll be here all day.
I've got something from across the pond on the atmosphere, Chris.
Yeah, go on, Jace.
Just so, one, working for a soccer team, that is one, family friendly, but also two, our main demographic is younger crowds. What we've done that Arsenal can easily do is you start to segregate people. It's not in a bad way, but we have we're going to have a family section in our stadium this coming year, and then we're going to have our, what we call our supporter sections, where we're going to put our official supporters that everybody that sits there knows you're going to stand, you're going to get beer thrown on you, you're going to sing the entire time, and it's going to be well away from the families so that the little children don't hear the words they shouldn't hear, but they're still going to be able to have the fun that they want. And it baffles me that they don't want the atmosphere. I support a college American football team called the Arkansas Razorbacks, who are in what's considered one of the most passionate areas of the country called the Southeastern Conference. Fans have kicked other fans out of the stadium because they weren't standing. We have gone to the extent that if you did not cheer with us, then you obviously were cheering against us. Even if you were wearing Razorback, we've kicked you out of the stands. We've created small earthquakes at our stadiums. And you can hear the players of any sport. Yes, they're focused on the game, but you can they can hear what the fans are doing. You know, with the team I work with now, we had a night where we had like a giveaway, and it was the thunder clappers that you have in the air that make noise. We gave like 3,000 of those away before the game, and the players came to me after the game and were like, "What did you guys do? Like the atmosphere here was rocking." And it wasn't our highest attended game or anything, but we had something that created an atmosphere, and the players, we won that game, by the way, I want to say 3-1. And the players feel that and sense that, and that actually does lift them because they it's not just noise or a song that they can hear. There's an electricity and a buzz that spills onto the pitch that they can take from that. And the fact that Arsenal are trying to squelch that atmosphere, maybe not... I get if they want the whole stadium to not be chanting and singing or whatever, and they want it to be family-friendly, but create certain blocks of sections where you can have people, whether they're standing sections or whatever, let people know, like, hey, if you're in this section, you're going to chant and you're going to sing. So if you want a quieter experience, you need to go sit here. That's the way that they need to approach it to allow you can find the happy medium to where you can have the atmosphere but also have the more corporate culture where you have these people who aren't really Arsenal fans. They're just going because we play an attractive brand of soccer and football. But because it is becoming library-esque in there, and that's coming through on broadcasts as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you make a good point. I think the biggest problem that you've got is that, I know myself and John were talking about this last night, there's a lot that has to change, and not just about Arsenal. This is not just an Arsenal issue, this is an issue about English football as a whole. And I know you get hundreds of people, I know, John, you've got a friend who likes to travel to watch the Bundesliga games, and people always say, why can't we be more like the Bundesliga? It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen, I'm afraid. Like, we're not the same type of country in our laws, in our regimes. And, you know, it's just everything would have to change. And Stanley will never come back, you know, this country. It'll never come back unless you get a government that is, you know, heavily football orientated from the 80s, 70s. I just can't see it. And unfortunately...
You have to vote for that government first, Chris. Sorry, well, just a little dig from our conversation the other night.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, like my voice counts. I know what you mean. But yeah, I mean, it isn't going to change. And the only way that we can change it from our perspective right now is like Carl says, is by getting behind the players, you know, and supporting them. And this notion that you can't sing when you sat down, sorry. I'm not having that. I'm just not having that. You might not be able to broadcast yourself as much. You know, you might not be able to get your sort of point across as loudly. But if enough people get together, you can still make plenty of noise. Trust me. So there are ways. Look at the Champions League nights. I think Jeff made a very good point the other night on the pod that it's funny how the fans can get behind the team for big fixtures. But yet on other fixtures, you know, when we really need them the most, sometimes some go missing. And that's not a knock at the regulars, because I'm sure, you know, we have our away support to their game. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But that's just something I wanted to touch on. Carl, you just made a point. I'm going to just make this point actually quickly. You just put in the chat box there. We won and people are talking about replacing the manager. Guys, seriously, move on. Honest to God. I mean, you know, you guys have the right to say what you want, of course, free speech, but... Come on, guys. Really?
There's no such thing as free speech in this country.
God. Why? Just why? That's
a myth.
At the end of the day, we've got to think about it. He's not going to go anywhere.
Exactly.
If you're talking about maybe the end of the season, maybe. But what's the point of talking about replacing him now? Yeah. It's going to do absolutely nothing. Like, I'm not either Wenger in or Wenger out. I'm pro-Arsenal. You know, Arsenal were there before Arsene Wenger was there. He'll be there. Arsenal will be there. Whenever Arsene Wenger decides to leave. At the end of the day, we just need to back the team as much as we can until the end of the season. If he fails at the end of the season and we don't win it, you know, okay, bring up the conversation then. But until then, let's just back the players and back the team, what we've got, until then.
Yeah, agree. And I know Liam's put, you know, we're 6 points behind Leicester. Yeah, I know that, Liam. I'm fully aware of the table. It's also February the 7th. So, you know, come on, guys, seriously. I mean, yeah, if you guys want to debate, I mean, it's up to you, it's your forum. I just want to put it out there right now. I'm not going to be taking questions on the manager, so don't bother asking. let's touch on the rivals then. John, seeing as you didn't see much of today's game, let's talk about yesterday briefly. Leicester, I'm not going to change my views. I still think that they won't be there at the end of the season. I still don't think they've got what it takes to win it. But as I said in my tweet yesterday, my hat goes off, you know, fair play to them. They went to Manchester City and beat, let's be honest, a pretty average City side on the day. They didn't turn up. That's not taking anything away from them. They were superb. But I think it's fair to say City were not great. Do you see this gap as insurmountable, or do you sit with me and go, you know what, we've won today, we beat Leicester next week, which I think is a must, and all of a sudden it's all change again? Where do you sit on the race? Let's just focus on Leicester for a minute.
No, it's not insurmountable. They looked, to be honest, a little bit scary at Man City. I know Man City didn't play especially well, but Leicester battered them. There's no two ways about it. They could have won that game 6 or 7 quite comfortably. You know, we could win and beat Leicester, and you know, then it changes things. But no, I think they've got every chance and every right to be there till the end of the season. The idea that they will buckle under the pressure, I understand why people say that, but last season they were under the pressure of relegation, came through it and kept that form going. Now they've got absolutely no pressure on whatsoever. They have no expectations. I know the now changed to they are now the favourites to win the league, but those players, every day they go into training, they're just going to have fun now. That is all they've got to do. They just go out and just get to play. And that's what the one thing with Leicester is, that all they've done all season is just go out and play their football. And they, you know, with the few games where they changed, they went a little bit more defensive. They did that for that small period just to hit that 40-point mark. And then they went back to playing the way they are. And they've been doing that ever since. So I certainly think they'll be right in there. Obviously, yeah, if they get an injury or two to a key player, that'll hit them. Jace has just put in, yeah, they've got no other commitments, no FA Cup, no League Cup, no Europe. So they're playing once a week. They're getting, you know, 6-7 days between games. That's huge. We saw how much that helped Liverpool in their title push, obviously until Gerrard fell over. Ha, twat. So I had to put that in there. Scouse, fucking idiot.
Walls come pushing down.
So yeah, no, it'll be a really good game next week. You know, it's the sort of game where it could go, it could end up 0-0, be an absolute thriller. It could be like 7-2, so you know, ridiculous, something like that. I imagine, excuse my language, but my arsehole will be going, 5p, 50p the whole way through the game, because it'll be end to end, no doubt. But you can't discredit them. And the fact that they beat City, I don't know if that does us a favour or not. I'm not really sure.
I think it does.
City are so confusing at the moment, because I can't work out whether they're going to turn it around and do it for Pellegrini before he goes or not. And they all seem to like him, and he seems like a nice guy. I don't know.
Yeah. Jace, I'll touch on one of the other rivals, and then I'll save the worst for last for Carl. But I want to touch on City with you. I'll answer John's question now. I think for me, that result was the best result for us. Yes, I know some people wanted a draw, but for me, you know, John is right. You know, Leicester don't have any other distractions. They can just enjoy it. I think that only takes you so far. And when it really comes down to it, the last sort of last month of the season, last sort of 8 to 10 games, I think that's when the experience tells. And as much as Man City sunk the place up yesterday, Yaya Toure, you, sir, are a fraud. Man City, don't roll your eyes at me, Welsh, you know it's true. But Jace, I mean, do you still see City as...
He's not a fraud, he's just lazy, there's a difference.
He's a fraud. Do you see City, you know, getting things right? I mean, I still think they're the best side in this league with us. I still think that they will go on some sort of run. And if anything, yesterday is only going to refocus them. What do you make of their push now?
Yeah, you have to fear City more than you fear Leicester in the long run, just because of the depth of the team that they have, and the potential talent is what I will call it. Because Yaya Toure, like we mentioned yesterday in the WhatsApp group, while he's not a fraud, as you believe, Sir Pirate, he's extremely apathetic, which is actually worse. because it's not like he's masquerading as some player that he's not. He's just not giving his all when he should be. And that's more to me of an indictment of a person than somebody trying to, you know, oh, I'm a world-class player when he doesn't have the talent. I do think if he actually applied himself over 2 or 3 years, he could be in the discussion with the world-class players, but he just chooses not to. Therefore, he's not, and he never will be, because he's not going to turn it on now. But you have to respect the talent that they have. You know, I think even if Leicester win this year, next year with all the fixtures they have, even with the money that's coming in, they'll finish sixth or seventh. Even if they win this year, just because it's so tough when a team has Champions League, FA Cup, League Cup, City's got all of these extra competitions. We've got all these extra competitions that Leicester doesn't have now. They're going to be a drain on all of our resources. That's why I'm sort of shifting. I was sort of in your boat earlier on in the year when I thought, you know, Leicester around Christmas time, they'll start to fall off, a lot of fixtures. You know, they're not going to be able to keep up with the pace of the games that are played at that time with their depth, and they have, to their credit, which is why I'm starting to hop on the other side of the fence and think that maybe this is their year. But I do think that overall City has much more talent and is more of a direct threat to us. Maybe not this year, but this year and years to come, as opposed to Leicester, to me, seems to be more of a one-off.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, 100% agree with that. And I think you're right about the seventh or eighth next season. I do think that, mm-hmm. you know, that they're on the run, and it's great, you know. And it is great to see a team that are able to do this in the modern era and have put a run together. But the truth is, fairy tales do come to an end. And I personally still think it's a fairy tale. Again, don't shoot me. Just a view.
Even Cinderella got a divorce after 5 years.
Yeah. I will say as well, and I know people are going to think I'm absolutely mental, if it's a choice between Leicester or City, I'd rather City won it, because I don't want another team added to the roll of honour of the Premier League.
I'm not sure if anybody saw, but our good friend Simply Enigmatic, Sim, posted on Twitter last night that he has talked to Arsenal fans who want Leicester to win the league so that they can prove to Arsenal that it can be done with limited resources.
Yeah, I knew that would come out. I've been waiting for somebody to say that.
To which I get the out. Just quit your life at the moment and go off of Twitter, stop supporting this team, because that is a most ridiculous statement I've ever heard.
Yeah, I agree. I knew that one would be wheeled out.
See, you know, you can do it with it.
Oh, yeah, come on, seriously. Carl, I've saved the worst for last. I'm sorry, but, you know, you are the one at the epicenter of Ground Zero, that is North London. I'm just going to put this out there right away. Tottenham are not winning this league. They're not title contenders, and they will spectacularly fall, as usual. It might be a bit later in the season this year. What's your thoughts on them? And do you share my view that the Europa League will be a lovely little caveat for us when they start mounting their Thursday fixtures up again?
Definitely. I can't stand the bastards. Like, sorry for my language. I can't.
Amen.
I don't think you understand the hatred I had for them. And I know people say sometimes, you know, who do you hate more, Chelsea or them lot? It's them lot. It bugs me to say their name, like everything about them. As soon as the Europa League comes back, they will start to mess up. They will. Them Thursday, Sunday fixtures, when they have to travel to like Zagreb, like the deepest, darkest places of Russia, like, and then to come fly back on the same day and then to play on a Sunday, it will mess them up. Can't guarantee it's going to mess them up. You know, so, you know, they're having their time at the moment. I don't want them to get too far ahead, because I'd rather be sort of on par rather than have to claw back points. But no, as soon as the Europa League starts back, I think they will start to drop. And then also you throw in, because they're still in the FA Cup, so throw in the Sunday, Thursday, Thursday, Saturday, you know, it's going to mess them up. And they've been quite good with injuries as well. They haven't had that many injuries. I know their defender, Al Davida, I think it is, he's got an injury. But apart from that, they've been okay.
And to, one injury to the world's greatest striker, or the next Messi in midfield, which is hilarious in itself. One injury to either of those two, their backup is not. It's just not good enough. And I know people will say, what if we get Giroud injured? I get that. I would rather be relying on Theo Walcott than Clinton and G. Just saying. I'm with you. I'm with you totally. And this idea that the Europa League thing is a myth, just look at Spurs' results after they played on the Thursday. You tell me it's a myth. I give you Newcastle at home, boys and girls.
The only counter I would have to that, and it's not because I don't want to big them up because I fucking hate them at all, but the fact is they've got, is it Fiorentina?
Yep.
So they're basically, it's like it's not a huge long trip, and Fiorentina are a bit rubbish at the moment.
That's exactly it though, John, as you rightly say, Fiorentina are off form, so that essentially means they probably get through that tie, and even if they play some of the reserves or whatever, they probably get through, and then they've got another game, and although, as you say, it's not a particularly long travel, it's still travel.
What I mean is that the difference with it is from the group stage is that it's now more akin to what Champions League teams have to do in terms of travel and turnaround. And the difference between playing Thursday, Sunday to Wednesday, Saturday, I don't see the difference myself. I don't know. The only difference is in squad size. That's where you get the real difference in. I think they've perhaps got a deeper squad than they had years ago. But no, obviously, like if they get one injury to fucking Mongface up front, then they're bollocks completely.
Who, I have to just say, some people in the chat were saying that he's better than Giroud. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. No words. No, I do agree with you. I think that, I will say this right now, they will get no credit on this show as long as I'm running it. So anyone that wants to give them credit, you guys crack on. I won't be giving them any credit whatsoever. Totally with you, Carl. And anybody that says, oh, Chelsea are our bigger rivals or Man United, nah, it's always Spurs. If you're brought up, in the area particularly, I think for me, Carl will probably agree with this, it is definitely the biggest rivalry.
I do understand why some fans, depending on their age, might think like Chelsea, perhaps, or even fans overseas as well that might be like Man United, because they've basically, if they've only watched Arsenal for a certain amount of years, they've probably only seen Chelsea or Man United as their real rivals and don't really understand, maybe don't understand to the level of which, say, like London-based Arsenal fans would hate Spurs, because they probably go, why do you hate this team? They're shit, they don't win anything. I don't understand. They're not competing for anything. Which is true, because they are shit, and they don't win anything, because they're fucking awful. So it makes sense that some people might think Spurs, like Chelsea or Man United, depending on where they are or where they've been brought up, because they have been genuine rivals of things. They probably get confused why Man United fans hate Liverpool so much, because Liverpool don't win fuck all either. But
you have to go back the rivalry, so many, isn't it?
You have to go back so many years, and it's the bigger they were big rivals at the time and that kind of thing. It is a local thing. That's the other thing as well. I think some perhaps us as Arsenal fans, if you're from London, we have to accept that football is much more global now. So maybe we have to be a bit more understanding of the fact that certain Arsenal fans won't have exactly the same opinion as us and not be so dismissive of that view. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
I've never been shit talked by a Tottenham fan in the States. I've been shit talked by Chelsea fans specifically, who I hate the most. And then United fans. And don't be wrong, I still hate Tottenham. But in the U.S., for us, because it's not as localized, obviously, and there are more Chelsea United fans, that's why a lot of the, specifically I'll speak for U.S.-based fans, who maybe have never been able to get over to London and be there for a little while, have much more of a disdain for Chelsea, specifically because people in the U.S. who are Chelsea and United fans also tend to be massive douchebags.
In fairness, though,
there's generally bad people that you don't like anyway.
in fairness, though, Jace, the four Spurs fans in the US, you know, they're not going to get much of a voice, are they? So.
And I will tell. This is another funny story. We actually the Triangle Gooners here, who I watched the Arsenal matches with a lot of times, we were kicked out of our first bar. Because it almost came to blows the last day of the season in, I want to say, 12-13 between us and Liverpool fans. There's all sorts of random little rivalries depending on where you are, because Liverpool, surprisingly, also has a very large following here. And Tottenham are actually, it's so funny, love, in the U.S., Tottenham are the hipster team, because they hipsters like to support people who they know will never win.
Yeah, there we go. I also just say at this point in the chat room, some people are saying I'm biased. You're damn right I'm biased. This is an Arsenal show, so sorry. I've got another podcast which I'll be objective on that one. I'll be non-biased on that one. On this one, this is an Arsenal parish, and we talk Arsenal, not the other lot. So. Fuck them. Questions then. We've got about 10 minutes left because Jace has got Super Bowl things to do and stuff, so we're going to crack on in a minute. But questions, we have one straight away, which I've got from John here, from Arkan Tiger. Do you see any value in switching to 4-4-2 with Giroud and Sanchez up top against certain opposition? I'll give that to you, Carl.
No, because if you play 4-4-2, where does everyone fit in? Like, where does Ozil fit in? Do you play him on the left wing? Do you play him in the centre? That mean that Ramsey's on the right, Coquelin in the middle? No, 4-4-2 doesn't really work with us. The formation we have now is the one that we need. We do, however, need to find some way to sort of switch it up. You know, a plan B, as they say, because we only ever play one way. But as for that question, 4-4-2, not with the players we've got, no, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know a lot of people have said, oh, well, Leicester are playing it. And it's like, yeah, well, if you look at Leicester's style, it suits them. And the way that they're playing games, they can go in, as we've already touched on, with no fear. So I think they can afford to play two strikers. I don't think we can, particularly with the way we defend at times. So I'm with you on that one.
You could play it with, as a diamond.
Yeah.
But the two sort of the left and right mid are tighter in, and just use, because let's be honest, we don't have wingers, and just use the
full. Pretty much how we play anyway, especially if Ramsey's out wide. He's tucked inside so much.
Yeah, you know, you can have Coquelin as the deep one, and Ozil as the 10, and Sanchez, Giroud up top as a 2. But, you know, it's cool because it's old style. It's one short, quick player with the big lump who can knock it down and that kind of thing. You know, and you can use the fullbacks for width. I think maybe you could do it against certain opposition. It'd be nice in a game where you sort of 2-3 up to go, fuck it, yeah, let's stick 2 up front and really absolutely rip into pieces and get that proper ruthlessness.
I think the big issue with formation isn't necessarily how we attack, because we're always going to be very fluid and move a lot whenever we do attack. I think the biggest issue where formation comes into play is your shape defensively.
Yeah,
that's more important to the formation that you play. And that could use a tweaking. What that tweaking would be to me right now, I don't know, just because, one, you've got to get your wide players to buy in on actually tracking back, which it doesn't seem like Wenger is capable of doing with a lot of the wide players that we've got. Sanchez puts in a good shift, but Ox has trouble with it at times, Theo has trouble with it at times, Joel is better than both of those two, but not as good as Sanchez. So I think it's more defensive. I think offensively we'll always be fluid going forward, and people will shift and rotate and overlap and underlap. But defensively, that's you've got to make sure that it suits your personnel and their strengths more so on that side of the ball than it does going forward.
I also agree that nowadays, as a very low level football manager, but nowadays a formation is a base. It's not set in stone. You never see teams just sit in the formation they set up in. It's very fluid, and most footballers modern day nowadays, even at my level at Sunday League, they can all usually play a variety of positions and fill in for each other in positions. So I think it's largely a bit of a myth. Another question we had here, the cannon, who killed Tupac? John Welsh. John was responsible for Tupac's death. Some from Twitter, Arsenal fans want Leicester to win the league, but batshit crazy or batshit crazy. I'm going to take that one quickly, actually, Sim. I'm with you, mate. I don't understand. I don't understand how many Arsenal fans want Leicester to win the league. And it's not like they're prefacing by saying, well, if we don't win it, I'd like to see Leicester win it, which I do understand. But there are actually Arsenal fans out there now going, right, we're done, we're over, want Leicester to win it, get behind Leicester. I'm like, really? I did actually, I won't name the person because they're an embarrassment to life, actually hoping that we lost so that Leicester could win the league next weekend. You, sir, hang your head in shame. Another good question here, Dan Cronin. I'll give this one to Carl. Do we start Coquelin and Mertesacker next week? That's a good question because it's two players. What do you reckon?
We start Coquelin, we don't start Mertesacker. Because you know what's going to happen? Vardy is going to attach himself to Mertesacker and just run off him all game. So I think it's kind of telling this week that Per didn't start. Maybe the Wenger's just trying to get used to the sort of the partnership between our centre backs, but yeah, I wouldn't start Per next week or against Barcelona, just because you know what's going to happen. Per hasn't got that sort of turn and running. Leicester play on the counter; it's what they do. They play on a counter attack, and you know if they're smart, all this Vardy's going to do, attach himself to Per, balls over the top, running behind. So yeah, I would start Gabriel.
I think maybe that's the reason he's played today in the last few weeks. Go on,
can we put Mertesacker's brain into Gabriel's head?
Oh, that would be lovely. That would be lovely, wouldn't it? Yeah.
The one problem, I think Wenger will probably start Per for the Leicester game. I'm not necessarily saying it's the right thing to do, but if you don't have Per in the team, then Leicester are a huge problem from set pieces.
Totally.
Because their team is massive.
Yep, totally.
They've got some really big players in that side. I know City have been defensively pretty poor this season, but you saw some of the set plays that they really do punish teams, and it's probably been our biggest weakness this season. Despite Cech being in the team, which has been fantastic, and it's been a huge boost, from set plays we've really suffered. So there's a really delicate balancing act. I think that's why you're also likely to see Giroud probably start again to stay in the team, because he gives you that a bit of extra security in defence.
Yeah, and I also think that's exactly the reason why Coquelin didn't start today, because I think he wants to make sure he's absolutely right for Leicester, because he's going to be, his energy to combat Kante is going to be absolutely vital next week. You know, you can't, Kante is...
I can't see Flamini starting that game. That would be such a huge mistake, because Leicester moved the ball so quickly.
So quickly. And I think the thing is, and if you look at the counter-attack as well, Flamini will get lost in a counter-attacking situation. Coquelin won't. And I know people have given Mahrez and Vardy the credit. Kante is 70%. Leicester this season, genuinely believe
the fact that he didn't go over on a challenge that created Mahrez's goal.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's a play where everybody else goes over, then you have a free kick from, what was it, 45, 50 yards out.
Yeah,
it gets cleared. Instead, he kept running with the ball and kept his head up and found Mahrez.
It's the same reason why we miss Santi Cazorla so much, in my opinion, because he's the heartbeat and he dictates the pace and he slows it down when it needs to be and he moves it on when it needs to be. He's just a very, very good player, a good little player, and fair play to him. Let's do one more then, and then let's get out of here. Stefan, we'll do Stefan's and Josh's together, so I get them both done. Have you seen a team score in short spurts so much? And Josh, all right, serious question. Do we rest boys against Swansea for Barcelona? So, Jace, a very quick answer on Stefan's from you. So, have you seen a team score in such short spurts so much?
Not that I can recall. No.
That was short. I like it. Carl, I'll give you the last word. Why not? Because me and John are here every week. What do you reckon about Swansea and Barcelona then? Would you rest players for the Swansea game with Barca in mind?
Well, away. Haven't we got... do you mean Hull? Because we haven't got Leicester, then Hull in the FA Cup, then Barcelona.
Good point. Put it this way. Would you rest players ahead of either tie, full stop? Depending on the result of the first leg, of course.
I wouldn't rest anyone. I honestly don't think we're going to go through. So I wouldn't rest. I just play the squad that we've got. I have no expectations of us beating Barcelona home or away, especially not away. So No, I'd play our full squad because I think the FA Cup is probably the second best chance we've got of winning the trophy this season. So I'd go all out against Hull, even though they're, you know, Championship. I wouldn't. I'd play some of the kids, but I wouldn't go full rotation. And away against Barcelona, nah, I'm not resting anyone because we're not going to beat Barcelona at the Nou Camp.
I suppose a lot of it is really going to depend on how we do at home, isn't it? Is it the home leg first, isn't it? So, you know, if we go into the Barcelona second leg with any sort of chance, i.e. it's within a goal, then I think the manager will put full strength side out. If the nightmare scenario happens and we do get pelted at home, which for the record, I don't think we will, but if we do, then I think that's when you'll see changes. Go on, John, I'll just give you 30 seconds on this one because I know you wanted to have a quick word.
No, I just play the odds. We're not going through against Barcelona. If we do, brilliant, but I'm sorry, I don't see it. That front three is absolutely ridiculous. As much as I love Petr Cech and he's fantastic and I've got every faith in the team, Cech can only do so much, and regardless of which way you want to do and change that defence, I can't see us beating Barca over two legs. I just don't see it. In a one-off, yeah, you know, we can do it. I think we can go there and we can beat them. We've done it before. It's just over two games, I do not see it at all. And when we've got this chance to win the league, in a league that this year, as entertaining as it's been, I think the quality has been poor. Which, go win the league. Go win the league and win the FA Cup. Do the double. Just all day long. Do the double. You know, laugh at Spurs. Just all the good things. You know, laugh at how excited they get. They nearly win the title. They don't win it. And then their star, superstar player, Harry Kane, fucks off to Man United for a stupid amount of money. And then they go spunk it on a load of fucking mongs in the summer who can't play football and kick it properly. Then they sell him for a loss. And like Capoue ends up at Watford. And they realise, oh, actually, he was a good player. We just didn't know how to use him right and things like that, you know. Yeah. That's all I want. It's not a lot.
We're not asking for much.
And in that, I would even take getting hammered by Barca. I'll suffer the Barca humiliation if we get all the other things. There you go.
The thing is anyone actually really expecting us to go through against Barcelona? Like, genuinely expecting us to go to the Nou Camp and actually get a result?
Do you know what? It depends. I don't have any expectations. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm 100% confident that we will beat them over two legs. I do agree with John. Over two legs, it's tough. A one-off. I do think we will take something from the home tie. I do think we can actually beat them at home. I watched them this morning and they were pathetic at Levante. They won 2-0, but hey, it's La Liga. You know, what are you going to do? But they were terrible. And if Neymar does what Neymar did today, where he just dribbles into corners and refuses to get his head up and doesn't shoot on sight and cannot pass 3 yards, you know, we've got every chance. I think the biggest problem that we've got is that we have to keep three of them quiet. You know, whereas in previous seasons it was, we have to keep Messi quiet, we have to keep Zlatan quiet, we have to keep Iniesta quiet. Like, now you've got to keep those three forwards quiet, and if you do that, then you've got Rakitic and Iniesta to deal with after that. So, you know, it is going to be tough, but you know what? Barcelona are beatable, and I do agree with some people in the chat box. If we sit back, we'll get taken apart. If we attack them, they are vulnerable. Any defence that relies on Gerard fucking Piqué as their star defender is not that great at the back, trust me. And the goalkeeper, it doesn't fill me with confidence, bravo, either. I think he's, you know, he's decent, but he's got a rick in him. Dani Alves is barely a footballer, let alone a fullback. So,
we're going to sit back because we're scared of them, because they're Barcelona and we're Arsenal. That's the problem.
That's the worry. That's the worry. If we give them too much respect, they will come and they will piss all over us on our own pitch. That is a fact. You know, they will do that, and they are a very, very good group of talented footballers. But if we do what we did against them all those years ago, or if we start like we did against Man United, I know we've said this 1,000 times before, anything can happen. What I will say, and I'll go on record as saying this, the only way that we get through the tie is if we go to the Nou Camp with at least two goals in front, in my opinion. And I'm not sure we can do that, but
I don't see us coming away with a clean sheet in either game. So we're going to need away goals and a decent goal return at home. So
I think we'll score in the Nou Camp, but as you say, John, we need to make sure we're
going to concede at home. I just can't see them not scoring.
Yeah, but that's for another day, boys and girls. That's for another day. So we'll be back after Leicester. I think is it next Sunday? It's the early game again, isn't it? Next Sunday. So we'll be here for the early kickoff once again. I will just double check that, but I'm sure it is. Yes. In fact, it's 12 o'clock next Sunday. Oh, God. Danny won't even be out of bed. Danny won't even be awake. We'll have to wake him up.
Valentine's Day.
God, is it? Oh, load of
bullshit. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yeah, should be fun. Well,
be on Twitter if we lose, yeah.
whatever happens, we'll be here, rain or shine. I don't know who the lineup is, but we'll have some merry men here. Yes, Jace, go Panthers. But we'll be back. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Good communication and chatter, as usual. Shout out to Accidental Guna, who listens in as usual. And thank you to her, because she always tweets me some good stuff. And thank you to all of the chat box. And indeed, thank you to Carl, John, and Jace for stepping in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Cheers, Chris. Thank you for watching.
Always a pleasure. And yes, that's been ABW Radio. Check out our blogs, listen to our pods, and don't at me, bro. We will speak to you next week. Cheerio.
Keep at me.
Somebody